This is the Clinical Pharmacology Podcast with Nathan Tuescher, where I discuss clinical pharmacology and pharmacometrics topics from the perspective of drug development scientists. Today's episode will focus on modeling absorption profiles. As a pharmacometrics community, we have generally agreed on a set of compartmental models for the distribution and elimination of drugs. There are very few variations like nonlinear clearance that might be used, but there's a very few instances where somebody develops a completely new model for the clearance of a drug. Absorption models, on the other hand, are like clothes in our closet. There's a new one every season that everybody tries out. There's a reason for that, and I'll describe it in the podcast today. I'll start with some background on modeling absorption, then discuss a few specific model structures, and then I'll end with my approach to modeling absorption. There are absorption processes for any non-intravenous route of administration. However, the one we model most often is oral administration. Topical, subcutaneous, intramuscular, inhaled, and all other non-intravenous routes will have their own unique absorption mechanisms. Many of the principles I'll discuss here are applicable to those routes of administration. However, I'll focus on oral administration because the vast majority of drugs in development are intended for oral administration. There are many processes involved to start from a solid tablet or a capsule formulation being swallowed to the drug being absorbed into the body. Let me describe a few basic steps. First, the drug product is swallowed and enters the stomach. Then the stomach empties contents at various intervals into the small intestine, where the drug travels through the intestines until it's either absorbed at the gut wall, metabolized in the gut itself, or leaves the body in the feces. Now, the drug product can dissolve into the contents of the stomach or gut at any time, depending on the characteristics of the formulation and the targeted area for release. For example, coated tablets generally resist dissolution in the stomach and are dissolved in the small intestine. But uncoated tablets dissolve in the stomach soon after ingestion. Drug molecules are usually absorbed across the small intestine membranes and then access the portal vein. From there, drug molecules are transported to the liver and then they enter the blood circulation. Again, different drugs have different properties regarding the ability to withstand acidic environments in the stomach, cross the gut wall, and bypass liver metabolism. All of these processes are involved in the absorption of a drug after administration. But we almost never have data from human subjects regarding all of these complex steps. All we see is when drug appears in the bloodstream. After all the absorption processes are done is when we actually see the data. And we have very few tools that can allow us to experiment with specific absorption processes. It's a bit like when you hold a party at your house. You know when everyone arrives, but you don't know when they left your home to come to yours or what route they took. You can guess, but you can't really know for sure. All you know is when they showed up at your house. This is one of the reasons that modeling the absorption process is difficult. But it is also one of the reasons we can get creative. Most absorption models, or nearly all absorption models, are not mechanistic. They are empirical and used to describe the observed data. And we routinely lack sufficient precision to demonstrate specific mechanistic processes as the absorption path for this drug or for this formulation. It's tempting to build a mechanistic model, but honestly, I think it's a waste of your time for any in vivo studies in animals or in humans. If you want to design them with in vitro experiments, if you want to look at transporters, if you have ideas for specific drug delivery approaches, go for it. Be mechanistic. That makes sense. But once you start dosing in animals, it's all going to be empirical. So how do you get started with absorption modeling? The very first thing is to plot the concentration time data with a linear y-axis. Don't do a semi-log plot. You won't be able to see the absorption process. Do a linear plot. Then you want to zoom in on the data from dose administration till just after the Tmax. So you want to capture the peak and maybe a little bit after the peak when it starts to decline, maybe one sample or two. but you mostly want to look at from the time of drug administration till it hits the peak. And then you want to ask questions like these and maybe note down the answers. How many measurable samples do I have between dose administration and Cmax? Is it one? Is it five? Is it two? That's going to impact which models you can use. Are there BLQ samples after dose administration but before Cmax? This might mean that you need to use a lag time or some delay in the absorption process. What does the shape of the data look like? Can I draw a line from the origin to Cmax and capture most of the data? Or does the curve look concave, so kind of like a letter J, where it's a slow rate initially and then you get a faster rate later? Is the peak sharp or is the peak rounded off? How steep is the climb to the peak? Does it happen very fast or is it kind of slow to get there? Is there a single peak or are there multiple peaks? Do all the subjects look generally similar or are there big differences between some subjects? Do different formulations exhibit different shapes? Are tablets similar to capsules? Now, ask yourself some questions about the formulation. Is this designed as an immediate release product? Or is it a delayed release product? Or is this a combination product that's intended to have both a fast and a slow release? Do I expect one formulation to be faster than another in its release characteristics or its absorption characteristics? Does a lag time really make sense for this product? Answers to these questions will become useful when you start modeling. Not because you have to use a specific model if you see a certain feature, or if your formulation was designed in a certain way, but by understanding answers to these questions and what the formulations are supposed to be doing, your data can help you choose a model that is most likely to represent what's actually happening. And what's really interesting about absorption models different from disposition models is you can combine multiple absorption models together to achieve your desired features. You don't have to use just one. You can put multiples in the same model, and then you can achieve things like double peaks and fast and slow absorption. So let's start talking about a few different models, and with each, I'll describe the model itself and then what types of data and formulations work well with it. First order absorption is like a trusty pair of blue jeans. It's always there, it's comfortable, and you can wear it almost anywhere. First order absorption model is versatile and works with almost everything. In fact, it should be the first thing you try on most modeling projects when you're modeling absorption. First order absorption simply means that the rate of absorption depends on the concentration of drug in the gut, or better yet, the amount of drug in the gut. Mathematically speaking, the full dose is deposited into the gut at the time of dose administration, and then there is a first order absorption process from the gut to the systemic circulation. A single rate constant, Ka, describes the rate of absorption, and that rate changes based on how much drug is left in the gut. We often call the gut the depot in our models. So first order absorption involves estimating a single parameter, Ka. Another way to describe this is a bolus dose to the depot, and then first order transfer from the depot to the central compartment. The first order transfer is governed by the rate constant, Ka. With first order absorption, you can add an additional parameter for a lag time. The lag time is essentially a delay between when the dose was administered and when it starts appearing in the depot. The lag time just delays when absorption starts, not how fast it happens. When should you use the first order absorption method? Pretty much any time you can. It is a very simple model. It estimates only a single parameter in most cases, Ka, and it's well suited to describe the absorption of most drugs. It is really good when you have a sharp peak in your PK profile, meaning there's a single Cmax that's obvious, and then the samples before and after are much lower than Cmax. It allows for a rapid rise in concentrations with few assumptions, And it's also useful when you have a very few samples between dose administration and the peak. Because there's so few assumptions and a single parameter, it can handle the sparse data in the absorption period quite well. One trick is that if your model is under-predicting the Cmax with a first-order absorption model, try adding a lag time. That should delay the start of the absorption process a bit, which will cause you to have a higher Cmax. That's because it causes Ka to be steeper or have a steeper slope, resulting in higher concentrations. And you can use a lag time even if you don't have any BLQ samples between the dose and the first measurable concentration. So let's say your first concentration is at 30 minutes. That's okay. Stick a lag time in, and maybe the lag time is going to be 25 minutes or 20 minutes or 15 minutes. But what it's going to do is delay the absorption start for those 15, 20 minutes, and then it's going to have a steeper climb to get up, and it'll give you a higher Cmax. You can also use two first-order processes that happen simultaneously. All you have to do is create two separate depots that both have first-order absorption to the central compartment. Give the same dose to both, and then you estimate the fraction absorbed for one of the depots. So let's say you have a 100 milligram dose. You'd create two 100 milligram dosing records, one to each depot. Then you would estimate the bioavailability of depot A. And the bioavailability of depot B would be 1 minus the estimate for depot A. Now you can estimate two different rate constants and probably two different lag times, and the total dose will always add up to be 100 milligrams. This is very useful if you have a complex formulation with different release characteristics across the layers of the formulation. This model is very poor if your peak is rounded over or if the concentrations don't rise in a linear fashion. If there is curvature to your absorption profile, especially if it starts slow and then gets faster, the first order method won't work for you. The second method is called zero order. This one uses a name that is a bit weird, but you already know how to model it. Zero order absorption is identical to IV infusion. It's that simple. A zero order process is a constant amount of drug over time. So a specific number of milligrams per hour. Sounds like an infusion, right? It is. The only difference between an IV infusion and zero order absorption is that with an infusion, you know when you start and stop the infusion. With zero order absorption, you estimate the duration of the infusion based on the absorbed concentration information. You can use a lag time with zero order absorption if you want to, but I found it to be pretty rare. It does the same thing as I mentioned before, where it delays the start of absorption after dose administration. You may want to use a zero order method if the absorption profile starts to slow down as it gets near the peak. Instead of a sharp peak, you get a rounded top, and the absorption slows as it gets near that peak. Just like a constant rate infusion curve bends as it nears steady state, a zero order model will slow down as it gets closer to the top. The hardest part of fitting a zero order model is setting it up, but once you remember the trick, just use an IV infusion model and estimate the duration of the infusion, and then you're done. You've got zero order absorption modeled. Now I'm going to get into more complex or distinctive absorption models. The first was in vogue about 5 to 7 years ago, but has lost some of its luster recently. It is the transit compartment model. The idea is that absorption involves a series of compartments that the drug has to go through before it is absorbed into the systemic circulation. Let's think back to the first order model where you put all the drug in the depot and it gets absorbed into the central compartment. Now, imagine putting three compartments between the depot and the central compartment. You have one-way transfer from the depot to the first transit compartment, then from the first to the second, and then the second to the third transit compartment. And finally, first order absorption from the third compartment to the central compartment. What this does is creates a slow initial absorption because the drug is dosed and then it has to move through the transit compartments until it gets to the third one, and then it can be absorbed. And then you get an increasingly faster absorption over time until you get to a full first order rate constant. There's two parameters in this model, the transfer rate between transit compartments and the first order absorption rate. It is assumed that the transfer rate between compartments is the same for all the compartments. Now, to make this more attractive, some people figured out how to estimate the number of compartments. This adds one more parameter, the number of transit compartments. And that number doesn't even have to be a whole integer number. It can be a decimal number to create portions of a compartment. This approach gained a lot of traction because it provided a method to fit absorption profiles that start slow and then increase in absorption rate. For these subjects, the absorption profile appears concave, meaning flat initially and then curving upwards to get faster later, similar to the shape of the English letter J. More recently, a generalized version of this was developed and called distributed delay. This model suggested that individual drug molecules have a distribution of absorption delays over time. So instead of one lag time per subject, you have one lag time per drug molecule. These distributed delays are then the generalized version of transit compartments. So all this sounds really great until you have to run one of these models. They run slower than a car without any fuel or even an engine. They take forever, and they often don't minimize. Further, the transit compartment model has problems if the absorption of the first dose is not complete before the second dose is administered. And performing covariate searches or simulations with these models is very difficult. Basically, these models are great for academic papers, but not modeling real-world data. And I don't speak with a forked tongue. I'm an author on the paper that introduced the idea of distributed delay modeling with the proof that it is the generalized form of the transit compartment model. So my advice, don't use a transit compartment model unless you're trying to get an academic appointment or want to publish a methodology paper. There's a better way to model data than transit compartments. So what should you use instead of transit compartments? I use a combined zero and first order model. I've used this for many years, and I've found it to be very, very effective. In fact, when I started introducing it when I was modeling at Certara, many people didn't realize that you could do this and didn't even think to do this, and now they've incorporated it as their standard model for a non-first order absorption. So essentially, you use the same exact model structure as a first order absorption model. You have a drug depot, and then there's first order absorption from that depot into the central compartment. But instead of having a bolus dose to the depot compartment, you perform a zero order input or infusion into that compartment. So just like zero order I described above, you estimate the duration of infusion into the depot. All that is required to change the dosing from bolus into the depot to infusion into the depot is a simple change in the dosing record. That's it. But it works so fantastic. So let me explain why it works. The first order process depends on how much drug is in the depot. Initially, the depot is empty, so there's no absorption. And then there's a little bit of drug in there from the infusion. So the rate is slow because the rate depends on how much drug is in that depot. As the infusion continues, the amount of drug in the depot builds up and gets more and more and more until the infusion stops. And so as that builds up in the depot, the rate of input into the central compartment increases. So you get an ever-increasing rate of absorption until you start running out of drug, and then it slows down again. And what this gives you is initial absorption gets faster and faster, and then it starts slowing down. And that works great if you have a rounded peak. If you don't have a sharp peak, that's exactly what's happening. You have slow absorption, then it speeds up as it rises, and then it starts to slow when it hits the top. So if your profile looks like a hill and not a sharp mountain peak, this zero, then first order process might work great for your data. You can include a lag time if you have a delay. However, sometimes different infusion durations may imitate different absorption times without the downsides of a lag time on model fitting. Lag times result in a discontinuity in the profile, which makes minimization difficult sometimes. It goes from no drug absorption to absorption in a millisecond. That's the discontinuity. You don't often need it with this model if you just put an eta on the duration parameter, so you get different zero order input rate durations for the different subjects, and that'll change their delay. Either their duration's really, really small, so it looks like it's first order, or maybe it's really long and it looks like a lag time, and then it goes up. So the last model I will mention briefly is the Weibull model. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. It's Weibull. And this model was really popular in the late 1990s and early 2000s as an alternate to first order absorption model. The Weibull model uses a time varying absorption rate. The variations can be estimated with two parameters, alpha and beta. These parameters do not have a biological meaning, but they can create a changing first order rate constant. Effectively, this does the same thing that I described for transit compartments, distributed delay, and the zero first order approach. It works well, but it is also computationally demanding and requires using ordinary differential equations. It may not be as slow as transit compartments, but it is definitely slower than the zero first order approach that I just described. So as I conclude, I have not shared every possible absorption model with you, but I have shared the most common models that you might encounter. In particular, you can combine multiple versions of these together in the same model to achieve the shape that you want. I have prepared models with two separate first-order processes with different lag times to represent a biphasic formulation with immediate and extended release components. I've used the zero first order approach to model highly variable absorption that shows no delay for some subjects, but significant delays for other subjects. And I have combined the zero first order and a first order alone to give multiple peaks. Your creativity in combining these can be endless. But here's my recommendation. If you have a sharp peak, you should use a first order absorption model. If you can't hit the peak, try adding a lag time to help increase your peak. If you have a rounded peak, I recommend the zero first order model. You may not be able to support eta parameters on both your duration and first order rate constant parameters, but I would tend to put the eta on duration rather than Ka. And if your absorption looks like it slows as it reaches the peak, try a zero order or IV infusion model. That's it. Those three models are likely to be the only ones you need, and all can be fitted without differential equations. The models run relatively fast and can accommodate a very wide range of absorption profiles. And that's it for today. I hope you enjoyed this discussion of absorption models and that you can put this to use in your work. For more information, please connect with me on LinkedIn, send me an email to nathan@tuchersolutions.com, or sign up for my newsletter at tuchersolutions.com/newsletter. The newsletter is a copy of the show notes sent to your email each time an episode is released. Also, please subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to the show. Thank you.